Well, I trust we will see how great God is through the lives of the exiles. And we had a wee break from that last week, but we're back thinking of where we left off. Didn't want to keep you hanging on any longer, because we were right in the middle of the story of Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego. And of course, we knew what was facing them. But we've been asking ourselves questions, and these are questions that we are finding answers to in the lives of the exiles. Daniel and his three friends are the ones we've been asking so far. What happens when a nation disregards God's law? Was the first question. What are we bringing to the table? Second question. What should we expect if we live to please the Lord? How do I know I have a God-given gift? Am I honouring the Lord where he has placed me? And our last study centred around this question, what part does fear play in my life? You see, it wasn't the case that the three Jewish exiles had no fear. It was a case of priority. They had a lesser and a greater fear, as taught by Jesus in Matthew 10 and 28, where he says, "Fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell." Jesus isn't saying that you won't be afraid of things or you won't be afraid of people at times. He's just saying it's a matter of priorities. Fear the Lord first. But so often the fear of man comes in and prevents us from seeing the Lord. And Jesus is saying, be very careful of that. And we can see that the three exiles got it right. They had never heard the words of Jesus at that stage, but Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah got their priority right when it came to fear. What part was fear playing in their lives? Well, they were motivated by a fear of offending God, and that overrode every other fear of man. Well, this week's question is, how well do I know my God? How well do I know my God? So, Daniel chapter 3, picking up the reading at verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter, or we have no need to answer thee. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not," that is, if he doesn't, chooses not to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, "be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up." So in that couple of verses, we're back to where we left off last week. So they're confessing two things. They're answerable only to God, the God whom we serve. But they're not only just saying that, they're also saying something else. And this is important. We've been singing how great is our God. The second thing they're confessing is, our God is able. How is it that they could say that? How is it that they feel, how is it they believe that? That their God is able. Well, they could go right back to the beginning of their Bible and they could quote Genesis 1 and 1. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Started with God. God created the heaven and the earth. So the question is, how did they know God is able? Well, there's a good answer. That's a good starting point. But the Lord makes a connection between his ability to intervene and his ability to create through the prophet Jeremiah. We have this in Jeremiah 32 and 27, and it's God who says, "Behold, I am the Lord, the God of all flesh." Here's the question, "Is there anything too hard for me?" And in that same chapter, this is what we read, "Ah, Lord God, behold, thou hast made the heaven and the earth by thy great power and stretched out arm, and there is nothing too hard for thee." See the connection between being able and having made the heaven and the earth by his stretched out arm. Now, we either believe that or we don't. Here we are on this last Sunday of 2021, standing on the threshold of a new year, God willing. Think of the words of the angel to Mary concerning her virgin birth and the miraculous pregnancy of her cousin Elizabeth. For with God, nothing shall be impossible. Now, those words wouldn't have been known by the three friends of Daniel, nor would they have known what I'm about to quote from Revelation 19 at the end of verse 6. For the Lord God omnipotent reigneth. What does omnipotent mean? All powerful, almighty. So whenever we think about this, and I'm asking myself the question, how well do I know my God? If I'm just looking at the scriptures alone, I can see that my God is able. But then, with the word able in mind, let's think of some references where this is made. 2 Corinthians 9 and 8, Paul, of course, writing, says, and God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that ye, always having all sufficiency in all things, may abound to every good work. I see this verse in this way. If you're running on empty as a believer, you have no hope of being a blessing to others. That's a challenge for me in the service of the Lord. It's never just about us, you see. We are channels. We have to remember that, and we have to think that something's supposed to be channeling through us. Jesus said, out of your belly shall flow rivers of living water. So there was something going in. He who drinks of this water shall never thirst again. But there's also something flowing out, and it was going to be a blessing. And so many of us get that wrong. We think it's all about me getting the blessing, but it stops with me. Are we channels? God is able to make all grace abound toward you. But there's a purpose that having all sufficiency, so in other words, me being filled, I will then be able to overflow and I'll be able to touch the lives of others. Does anybody remember an odd little chorus? We'd learned at Sunday school, running over. We enjoyed the actions more than the words, I think. But there's an idea of that. My cup's full and running over. The idea is that it would be evident that we're filled and that the capacity has been reached and that it's going farther than you and me. Have we got an us for and no more mentality when it comes to assembly, life and witness? Or are we at all touching anybody else? Well, the secret is, of course, like the hand and the glove, we need to be filled ourselves. And he is able to make all grace abound towards us, that we, having then all sufficiency, can then abound to every good work. Are you ending 2021 with nothing in the tank? Well, it's not for want of our able God's able provision. God is able. Jude verse 24, now to him that is able to keep you from falling and to present you faultless before the presence of his glory with exceeding joy, and something similar in 2 Timothy 1 and 12. For I know whom I have believed, and am persuaded that he is able to keep that which I've committed unto him against that day. Maybe is there somebody here today, and in 2021 you've been inconsistent in your walk. You've maybe struggled with temptation. You've maybe, because of that, been plagued by doubts. Don't carry those past defeats with you. Let the Lord turn those into present victories and, in his will, future acts of service for him. The old enemy would want us not only to get down or to fall down, but to keep us down. That's not the whole story of the Christian life, is it? That wasn't the story for Peter. He's able to keep us. Believe that. And then Ephesians 3:20. Now unto him that is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that worketh in us. What are you thinking as you pray? He's able to do above all you ask or think. What are you thinking as you pray? Here are some suggestions. You're thinking, I must pray, but I've been praying for this situation that's on my mind. I've been praying for it for years and nothing has changed. In fact, things may even have got worse. Is that the way you come to the Lord as you pray? In fact, sometimes I've heard people pray in prayer meetings and that's exactly the way they do pray. They say, Lord, woe is this. And they give the Lord 20 reasons why this will never be any different. That's not thinking for much, is it? So it wouldn't be hard for God to do greatly above that. But imagine if you, as you pray, are thinking about who it is you're praying to and how able he is. Well, that's a challenge, because then God still must keep his promise that he's able to do exceeding abundantly above that. That's praying powerfully. Paul wants us to remember that he's able to do exceeding abundantly, but also it's according to the power that worketh in us. So, with that in mind, let's go back to our question. How well do I know my God? Well, with regard to the three exiles, they were able to say, our God is able. Our God is able. Now, what a witness to make in front of a pagan king. A king who thought that he was able to do what he pleased to whoever he pleased. And Nebuchadnezzar certainly was able. He was able to coerce the vast majority of his subjects into worshipping him. He's able to sentence them to death if they refuse. But he's about to see something. He's about to see that his ability, vast as it is limited. Verse 19. Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace 7 times more than it was wont or used to be heated. And he commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Now, it wasn't because Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego would be resisting. But they wanted to. This was to give out a message. And they were going to be tasked with hurling these guys into this furnace. He commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen, their hats, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent and the furnace exceeding hot, the flames of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Has any of you ever had a burn? It's a sore thing, isn't it? Have you ever seen people who, through some tragedy or other, were badly burned? You wouldn't want to be there, sure you wouldn't. Can you picture this? Can you picture the thought of it? Facing this? There certainly wasn't going to be much hope of survival, was there? And the onlookers would be horrified to see these fit, strong soldiers roasted at the mouth of this kiln. those same onlookers, having witnessed that spectacle, would have been certain that the death and immediate cremation of these three Jewish captives would at least have been quick, if nothing else. But the execution didn't go to plan. Now, pay particular attention to that, because as we go through the story of the exiles in the Lord's will, we might come across another couple of executions that didn't go according to plan. And there's a very good reason for that. Our God is able. Verse 24, then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished and rose up in haste and spake and said unto his counselors, did not we cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said unto the king, true, O king. He answered and said, lo, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Now, if Nebuchadnezzar was astonished, and he was, how do you think Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were feeling? Have you ever had that idea that something's going to happen and you cringe and you shut everything down and then it doesn't happen? Pat, try and put yourself in that position. They're going to be roasted alive. They've just seen the boys that were throwing them in die at the mouth of the kiln. And yet, here they are, walking around. They've been delivered. Something has happened. In fact, the only items that were utterly consumed by the furnace were their restraints. Praise the Lord. Whatever it was that was tethering them was burned up. And something else, they aren't crouching in a fetal position the way some of those human casts have been found at the sites of volcanic eruptions in antiquity. And we see them crouching. They're not doing that. They're not hopping up and down in the scalding fuel. They are seen walking. Now, walking isn't really a posture of fear, is it? Do you remember 9/11? We saw that unfold before our eyes. We saw people screaming and running up the streets as those clouds of dust and debris followed them. Walking isn't the posture of fear. They're walking uninjured. They're walking unfettered. And they have company. That's important. How well do I know my God? Well, they did know their God, but they were going to know something even more. You see, as we walk with the Lord, it's not just a case of what we arrive at some position where we feel we're sound and others clap us on the back and say, you're sound and I would love to know as much as you and all that there. We should always be discovering more and more. So, again, look back over 2021. Have you grown? Have you come to know more about your Lord, the God you serve? Have you come to experience Him in deeper ways? Here's a verse that most certainly applies to this passage. And it's written in the section of Isaiah that's the comfort section, the section that was designed to be used by those who would be taken into captivity. So it was written for this purpose. So from Isaiah chapter 40 onwards, we have this very unique section. And here's what we read in Isaiah 43 and verse 2. When thou passest through the waters, I will be with thee. And through the rivers, they shall not overflow thee. Here's the bit. When thou walkest through the fire, thou shalt not be burned, neither shall the flame kindle upon thee. Wonder did that come into their mind, because they would have known that. That was written for them and for that period. But here's the bit. It's not just the you'll not be burned. No, no. When you're there, I will be with you. They weren't alone. Do you remember the excuses that were made by Moses when he called him to deliver the Israelites out of Egypt? Here's how the Lord answered the first excuse. And it's Exodus 3 and 12. Certainly, I will be with thee. And then, as you know, Joshua became the deliverer after the death of Moses. And here's how the Lord called Joshua, Joshua 1 and 5. As I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee nor forsake thee. What were these men learning? They were learning to know their God. A number of times in this narrative, I've tried to emphasize it as we've read it. You count the number of times you see the word midst or middle. They were thrown into the midst of the fire. They were seen walking in the midst of the fire. All in the middle, in the middle, in the middle. Are you in the middle of something? Are you engulfed by a situation? Does it feel like a sea? Does it feel like a fire? That makes me think of the disciples of Jesus who had just been with the Lord and seen his miracles. And then Jesus takes them away from that picture of success and says, I'm going to go over to the other side and going to go up into a mountain and going to pray. But I want you to take a boat and go over to the other side. So there they are, doing what Jesus has said. We could say they're in the center of God's will. They're being obedient servants. But that doesn't mean they're exempt from trouble. In fact, quite often it's those who are leading that obedient life who are caused to face the most deep and difficult trials. And what we read about the story is it was the middle of the night. They were in the middle of the lake, and suddenly they were in the middle of a storm. The emphasis on the middle of something. It's whenever you're in the middle of something that you can't see the end, isn't that right? When we're going through trouble, we never say, oh, do you know, I'm nearly at the end of it. When we're going through it and we're feeling it at its worst, we always say, I'm in the middle of this. Well, they were in the middle of the burning fiery furnace. But just as Jesus came walking to his disciples on the water, and just as he witnessed all that they were going through and saw them struggling and rowing, just as he was there for them before they realized it was him, so the presence of the Lord was with these three men in the middle of this burning fiery furnace. How well do I know my God? Well, one way of getting to know the Lord is to let the Lord walk with us and not close him out of our lives when trouble comes. Not take ourselves off and shut ourselves away from the people of God, those whom God has designed to be around us as a help and a support. And so many, when they're in the middle of something, they behave and act and talk as though God had abandoned them. That's sad. Because what they're really sending out is a message that he's not able when he is able. And he does walk with us. Verse 26. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God. And that's a very interesting turnaround, isn't it? Come forth and come hither. Now, he's been very specific, isn't he? He names the three of them. He doesn't make any mention of the fourth. He names the three of them specifically, but he doesn't make any mention of the fourth. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth out of the midst of the fire, where the fourth person doesn't emerge. His job was done. The fourth person is described by this pagan king, and we only have his words as they're recorded. It's not a commentary given by whoever wrote Daniel. It's the words of the king is all we have. And he describes the fourth person in two ways. Firstly, the Son of God, and later on as God's angel. Now, if this is a pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus, the Son of God, then it's what theologians call a theophany. Whether the fourth person in the fire was a theophany or an angel, the truth still remains that the Lord protected them. The Lord made his presence real and known to them at the time when they needed it most. These flames were hotter than usual. These flames that scorched the strong men, unfortunate enough to have the job of casting the three exiles into the furnace, these three flames were able to do that. These flames succeeded at incinerating the ropes that restrained the exile, but these same flames could not burn Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The flames weren't able. Nebuchadnezzar wasn't able. His decree wasn't able. His strong men weren't able. And the fire wasn't able because God is able. And that made all the difference. Who did they fear more than flames or fire or king or statute or image? They feared God more. And this is a picture of priorities. And they step out alive and well. Were there any witnesses? Yes, there were. Verse 27, the princes, governors, captains, king's counselors gathered together, saw these men upon whose bodies the fire had no power. I love that. Nor was an hair of their head singed. Neither were their coats changed, nor this is even better, the smell of fire had passed upon them. You don't have to get too close to a bonfire as a youngster to come away with the smell of fire on you. Your mother says, where were you? And you're stinking with the reek of the bonfire. That wasn't even on them. Do you know, when God does something, he does it well. Now, can you imagine? This scene all started with, and it was always emphasized through the readings, wasn't it? When you hear the sound of the psaltery and the sackbut and the dulcimer and the harp and all kinds of music, suddenly I visualize a hush over this whole scene. Maybe punctuated by gasps of amazement. Here's the golden image. It's now been ignored. This was the dedication of the image. They were to fall down and worship the image, and in so doing, of course, worship Nebuchadnezzar. But suddenly the image is unimportant. Not wonderful. This massive, big, silly thing is no longer even the focal point. There's a far better sight at the mouth of the kiln. It's the sight of God at work. Do you want people to get their eyes off the bad things and the things we can see in the world today where we know the devil's behind it? The idolatry that's everywhere, even materialism and all of this. We could list all the idolatries of the world. You know, one way to get people's eyes off that, we can go out and we can shout at them and condemn them. But a better way is to let them see the power of God in our lives. Let them see that Jesus is alive and well, and Jesus is with us. Now imagine if you were one of those princes, governors, captains, kings, counselors, and all the rest of it. and you've just seen these men come out. Remember, these were the boys who were the whistleblowers. These were the boys who knew that, oh, by the way, King, there's three Jews here, and they won't bow down. Now, you imagine that. You were the ones that told the tale. You carried the story. And not only do you see them walking out fit and well, but you hear the king say, the God of these men. I think if I were one of them, I'd be panicking at that stage. Remember, Nebuchadnezzar had only invited those influential and important leadership people to the dedication because he wanted them to be able to carry the news into the different provinces and realms from which, in which they worked and labored for the king. And he was hoping that what they would be carrying away that day would be, what an amazing statue. What an amazing act of worship. What amazing music. What an amazing crowd. What splendor. And you know the story they'd be taken away? The king put three Jews into the fire and they didn't burn. Hasn't God a wonderful way of turning things around? Never despair. And we do despair at times, don't we? We despair at what we see and what we hear. I do. I'm sure you do too. Don't despair because I know my God. And I'm getting to know him. And I'm getting to know him in difficulty. And I believe my God is able. Then Nebuchadnezzar spoke. We have the king's words, but we don't have one word from Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Not a word. You see, they had said all they needed to say at the beginning of this whole thing. Our God is able. Our God is able. And he knew that what had happened was a demonstration that their God was able. He knew that it was a demonstration of the complete and utter faith they had in their God and that it wasn't blind faith or unfounded faith. They didn't have to add anything. They could have triumphed in the wake of the miracle. We might have done that, mightn't we? Might have been tempted. Nah, I told you. No, none of that. They knew when to speak up and they knew when to shut up. Their faith said it all. Sometimes we're speaking up, but there's not much that people can see in our faith that backs up what we're saying. Isn't that true? That's sad. Verse 28, then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And here's the other description. Who sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him. And have changed the king's word, or ignored the king's word really, and yielded their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. What a journey for the king. From forcing an audience to bow down before his statue to, at the end of this day, blessing the God of these three Jews. That day's events were advertised as a dedication. But it was really intended as a worship service for the king through an idol. However, it ended up being a praise service to the living and true God, the God of Israel. What did the king discover? That the three exiles were first and foremostly God's servants. That they trusted their God. That they knew their God. And they just couldn't obey any command that compromised their walk with their God, no matter what the cost. And Nebuchadnezzar realizes this and publicly says so. So in this exclamation of the king, And if it is just an exclamation, or maybe if he has, well, given the benefit of the doubt, been truly affected by what he has just witnessed, is there any sign that he's affected truly by, affected into action? Because quite often we can say something, we can leave a meeting, oh, that was for me, but then the actions the following week, months, years don't follow that or don't back that up. But verse 29 says this, therefore I make a decree. Now that's not the first time you'll read that as we go through the exile story. Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. Wouldn't it be a wonderful thing if the governments of this world would make a decree, you can't speak against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? But here's the problem today, folks, they're legislating against the inspired word of the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And that's sad. And that's where we are. They don't know God, you see. Well, how well do I know my God? Is it well enough to take my stand for him and his testimony, no matter what the cost? Do I know my God well enough to trust him completely at all times and all circumstances? Do I know him well enough to walk calmly through fiery trials, knowing that he will walk with me? Do I know my God well enough to commit the future to him? And verse 30 says, then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. May the Lord bless these thoughts to your hearts for his name's sake.